So good afternoon. My name is Mike Niehaus. I am here this afternoon to talk about deploying Windows 10. We have a kind of a broad swath of things to talk about. We'll try to go through as much as we can around Windows 10 deployment. But first, we should probably start off with just some dates to let you know what's happened and what's going to be happening. First of all, we did have a new release of Windows. Hopefully you've heard the anniversary update, also called Windows 10 1607. That was made available on August the 2nd on MSDN and VLSC. Hopefully you've already downloaded that and started trying it out. The new ADK has already been available. The only thing that's not available right now is LTSB. Windows 10 LTSB 2016 was also released, also finalized in August. It just hasn't been put onto the Volume License Servicing Center yet. That's going to happen next week. At that point, you'll be able to grab the media, the updated product keys that are only necessary for LTSB. They're not required for the CB and CBB releases. And there are also hotfixes that will need to be installed to support the LTSB release running in your environment. So keep that in mind. Otherwise, everything else should be set to go. We published the updates to Windows Update and Windows Update for Business. We published the updates to WSUS. You should be set to deploy. Now, some of you may have noticed with the 1511 update that if you had PCs that were pointing to Windows Update, they didn't actually receive the Windows 10 Enterprise 1511 update if they were KMS activated, because we were concerned that a KMS activated PC would upgrade while it wasn't on your corporate network and then wouldn't be able to reactivate. So we fixed that in the 1607 release. Now KMS activated PCs will maintain their activation state through an upgrade. And as a result of that, with 1607, we will upgrade Windows 10 Enterprise PCs via Windows Update. So if you're expecting that, great. If you're not expecting that, well, then you should probably take that into account and put the necessary Windows Update for Business policies in place to control those updates. So then let's talk about deployment. When we talk about deploying Windows 10, we've got some options. We have the traditional deployment capabilities that we've had all the way back to even Windows XP, where we could build a custom golden image and we can deploy that either to existing PCs or to new devices through a wipe and load process for existing PCs, through bare metal deployment for new devices. With Windows 10, though, we also added some new scenarios. In-place upgrade as a preferred option for moving from Windows 7 and Windows 8.1, and as pretty much the only option to stay up to date once you're on Windows 10. So we use an in-place upgrade process to deploy feature updates as they're released. We also have a new provisioning process that's used for new PCs, because we want to make it easier to take a new PC out of the box, plug it in, and not immediately wipe it clean and put a corporate image on it. We want you to be able to take the image that shipped on the device and then transform it into an enterprise device. Change the SKU, apply additional configuration to it, join it to your domain, get it to a point where it's managed, and then let the management tool take over from that point and fully configure the device for business use. So we'll go through some aspects of each one of those, really just trying to review what's changed since last year about this time when we were initially talking about Windows 10. So first, we'll talk about in-place upgrade. In-place upgrade continues to be improved. We've run through this process with hundreds of millions of machines now. It's working really well. That's not to say that it's been working perfectly. So we do have a bunch of little things that we have tried to fix up. First, it's important to note that there are some scenarios that in-place upgrade is really not designed to handle. So if you're coming from Windows 7 or Windows 8.1 and you want to go to Windows 10, you can't use an in-place upgrade if you want to change from x86 to x64. We don't support cross-platform upgrades. You can't upgrade a Windows to Go stick. You can't upgrade a device that's using boot from VHD. For those, you'd have to do a clean install. If you want to change from BIOS to UEFI, You can't use an in-place upgrade. Setup doesn't know how to do that because it doesn't know how to reconfigure the hardware for UEFI, then reconfigure the disk, then apply the new operating system to it. Now, that is possible through scripting and task sequence-based deployments, and there's a session later on in the week that Mike Terrell's doing where he'll talk about how to automate that, how you can do a wipe and load deployment for your existing PCs running on BIOS, converting them to UEFI and deploying Windows 10 at the same time so that you can take advantage of features like secure boot. That's the driving factor for wanting to do that. If you have dual boot or multi-boot systems, multiple operating systems on the same disk or on multiple disks on the same PC, you can try to do an in-place upgrade. We just won't guarantee that any other OSs that are on the machine will still boot afterwards. You may have to do some additional manipulation of the PC to get those other operating systems to boot again. So that one's use at your own risk, try it out, make sure that you're fully capable of recovering from that situation. You can't use a custom image with an in-place upgrade. To do an in-place upgrade, you have to use the install.wim that comes on the original Windows 10 media, with only subtle modifications allowed to that. We'll talk about what some of those subtle modifications are as we get deeper into this, but you can't take a machine, install the OS on it, sysprep it, capture that as a WIM, and then use that captured WIM to upgrade from any OS to Windows 10. In-place upgrade requires the install.wim because it really doesn't know how to deal with additional applications that are present in your custom images. It only knows how to lay down a brand new clean operating system and then merge all of your existing apps, data, and settings into that OS. There are also challenges with third-party disk encryption products. We have implemented a new capability in Windows 10 1607 to support upgrading machines that are encrypted with third-party encryption software, but you'll need to talk to the ISV who made that software and get from them the necessary driver files that you need to inject as part of the upgrade process. We've made it fairly easy to do that. In the past, you might have needed to mount WIMs and inject files manually. Now you can just put the necessary files in a folder and tell setup where to find them. It will automatically inject those drivers into the process. There's a new command line switch called Reflect Drivers that takes care of doing that. So talk to your ISV if you're not using BitLocker. Ask them about this process. Make sure that they've got this capability available. If they do, great, you can do an in-place upgrade. If they don't, well, there's always switch over to BitLocker. So that's third-party disk encryption software. It's getting better. It's not 100% perfect because not all the ISVs have implemented this yet, which is exactly what I talked about. 1511, you couldn't do it. 1607, you can do it. There are some additional steps required for doing that. We'll talk more about this setup config.ini. Actually, we'll take a look at that in a minute. The basic steps that you would need to do this if you're using a Config Manager task sequence are pretty simple. The Config Manager task sequence can take care of copying the files to the PC and then specifying the additional Reflect Driver switch using a task sequence variable to tell Config Manager where that folder is at to pass that along to setup. If you're using something other than task sequences or something other than Windows 10 media where you can specify command line options, you have to go through a little bit more work. For anything that's based on ESD files, where ESD files are the electronic software distribution files that are distributed through Windows Update and WSUS, in those cases, you can't modify the bits. You don't have a way of specifying command line options, so you have to have a different way of specifying additional parameters for setup. Fortunately, you can do that by creating a file called setupconfig.ini and placing that file in the path on the slide, the user's default app data Microsoft Windows WSUS folder. When you place the file there, the upgrade process will automatically find it, read the parameters out of it, process them, and really append them to whatever other command line options are being processed already. So that's a reasonable way to go about it. It works with WSUS, Windows Update, Windows Update for Business. You can do the same thing with anything that's based on the setup.exe doing a media-based installation like task sequences. So let's take a quick look at that, if I can wake up my PC here. There's a good scenario. It's always good to look at your PC and see a black screen. Wake up. Yes, I'm here. So we'll give that a minute to reconnect. Okay, so I've got a PC here running 1511. And on it, I've created the WSUS folder. The rest of the path would already be there. Users, default, app, data, local, Microsoft, Windows. So I created the WSUS folder and created a setup config.ini file inside of it. That file contains just a header that says setup config, and then a list of additional command line parameters that I want to pass into setup. But instead of specifying backslash parameter name and then value, it's an ini file syntax. So you specify parameter name equals and then the value that you want to pass. So in this case, I've added a command line switch to say that I want to install language packs, and I just point it to the folder that contains those language packs. And we can see that folder structure here has a subfolder in it, ESES. And if we look inside of that folder, there's an lp.cab inside of there for the Spanish language pack. So in this case, I can do an upgrade of the PC. This would be an English upgrade. After the upgrade, all the language packs need to be reinstalled. So I can stage those language packs onto the PC and pass them along to setup to tell it, now go ahead and do that. At that point then, if I initiated an upgrade via WSUS or Windows Update or Windows Update for Business or even Config Manager's servicing plans, you get to the point where you can restart. At that point, you initiate that and those parameters are processed by setup. So if we came back in roughly an hour or so, we should find a PC that's been upgraded to Windows 10 1607 and has the Spanish language pack installed. Which is the next topic, which I've already mentioned. We need to make sure when we go through an upgrade that the language of the media that you're using to upgrade matches the system UI language of the OS. If you don't have a matching language, the upgrade will fail. So you can modify the OS to change the system UI language, but that can only be done offline, which makes it rather inconvenient to do. So you'd have to boot into Windows PE, change the system UI language, and then reboot back into the OS and then initiate the upgrade. So there are some challenges around that scenario if you have lots of different base languages in use in your environment. If you're a multinational company and you've deployed a Spanish image in one location, an English in another, and a Japanese in a third, you may need to have three sets of upgrade media, one targeting each one of those. What we'd recommend to avoid that is to use a common base system UI language for all of your PCs, whether that's English or something else, and then layer additional language packs on top of that. Then you would only need one set of media to upgrade all the PCs. You do have to reinstall language packs after upgrades. That's what we were just looking at with the setup config.ini file. We are also working on publishing some additional guidance to make it easier to figure out dynamically what language packs need to be put back on a machine. So imagine running a configuration manager task sequence where you first want to figure out what languages you have, download just those language packs, and then pass them along to the upgrade process so that they can be reinstalled. That's the goal. The Config Manager guys are working on coming up with a good way of doing that to simplify this whole process. We have similar concerns around drivers. As we go through the upgrade process, whether we're coming from a down-level OS or doing a feature update from Windows 10 to Windows 10, most drivers are migrated forward. We will leave some drivers behind on the assumption that the inbox drivers that are provided with that Windows 10 release are better than the drivers that you would already be running. That's especially true with display drivers and Bluetooth drivers. Older ones generally are somewhat problematic, so we'll leave those behind and reinstall those particular devices using the inbox drivers. That might not be exactly what you want. You might want to specify your own drivers. You might also notice that some drivers will come from Windows Update if you're using Windows Update for Business. That's a good thing because we can get the latest drivers from the web. But if you're using Config Manager, MDT, WSUS, most of the time you don't have any of those drivers available, so you would have to go through some extra steps. It's easy enough to create a folder with the drivers that you want to inject and then specify that folder to setup so that it injects those drivers as part of the upgrade process. It's the same basic process that we were looking at for language packs, except instead of specifying install lang packs, you specify install drivers as a command line switch. So you can do that command line. We can do that through the setup config.ini file. At that point, Windows is just going to use its normal driver ranking rules and figure out what's the best driver for this device and install it. Dynamic update is a process that's used as part of the upgrade process to get the latest and greatest from Windows Update. That would include drivers that we just talked about. That also includes the potentially an updated cumulative update, maybe not the latest cumulative update, but one that's been targeted specifically to improve the upgrade process. And it will download updated compatibility information for the apps and drivers that would be present on your PCs. So dynamic update overall is generally a good thing, but it doesn't work in all scenarios. Works great with Windows Update, Windows Update for Business, but with WSUS and Config Manager, there's no great way to get that content into WSUS so that setup can find it and pull it down. So as a result of that, you may want to manually add that content into your media. In the case of the install.wim, if you're doing a task sequence-based deployment, you can just mount it, inject the latest cumulative update into it, and use that to do the upgrade. There are some other scenarios that will work as well. Like Config Manager has added a checkbox that says, use Windows Update for dynamic update. It's not exactly phrased that way, but basically, you can tell it to temporarily reconfigure the device to point to Windows Update so that it can download these pieces from Windows Update, do the upgrade to the latest feature pack, and then change it back to use WSUS for ongoing patching using Config Manager. So we're looking at those scenarios too, trying to figure out if we can make that better to provide better ways of doing that so each PC doesn't need to go out and download the bits necessary to do that. But at this point, you'll see a difference in behavior if you do Windows Update or Windows Update for Business versus WSUS or Config Manager to do this. We also have some challenges around size, and I've got an entire session on this, I think on Wednesday, talking about these challenges. So to get much more deeper into that, come to that session. But there are two basic challenges. One is the size of the feature updates when we push those out. For an x64 PC, they're about 3.5 gig. So each PC needs to download 3.5 gig to do that. That's also the size that would be used to upgrade from Windows 7 or Windows 8.1. We also have monthly patches. Those monthly patches, if you look at the total size of them, are up to about 1 gigabyte right now on Windows 10, 15, 11. If you look at Windows 10 1607, since it's fairly new, they're much smaller than that, but they grow each month since they're cumulative. Now, if you're using Windows Update, WSUS with Express Updates enabled, or Windows Update for Business, it's smart enough to only download the new components that are in that cumulative update. So it does a Delta or an Express Update installation where it only pulls down the pieces that are needed. That's probably more like 100 meg a month, much more manageable. But if you're using Config Manager, today Config Manager doesn't support those Express Update installation options, so as a result, the Config Manager client has to download the entire update before it hands it off to the Windows Update agent for installation. So as a general recommendation, we encourage organizations to set up a peer-to-peer distribution mechanism. Whatever the most appropriate mechanism would be for that. If you're using Config Manager today, the easiest way to do that is branch cache. If you're using WSUS, you have a couple of options, branch cache or delivery optimization. If you're using Config Manager in the future, they're looking to add an additional Config Manager peer-to-peer capability that will work as well. So getting that set up enables more of a fan-out distribution so that one client on a particular subnet can download the pieces locally. Once they have them, then they can provide the bits to the other PCs on that same subnet. As a result, you don't need as much capacity in your data center or on your distribution points. Instead, the load is distributed. Now, that doesn't mean that it's going to necessarily be perfect. Imagine if you pushed the button and distributed Windows 10 1607, all 3.5 gig of it, to 1,000 PCs in your main office. Those 1,000 PCs may receive that request at about the same time and all start downloading 3.5 gig at once. Even if you're using peer-to-peer distribution, that can have an impact on your network. Imagine 1,000 PCs suddenly starting to share 3.5 gig among each PC on a particular subnet. It's going to make some switches very busy, or if they're connected over wireless, it's going to make the wireless access points very busy. So there are some additional controls that could be put in place with bits throttling and additional things like that. We'll get deeper into that in the size session, and Andreas has a session on really digging deep into branch cache on Friday. So any questions around those types of scenarios, check out those sessions. Express updates are easy to turn on if you're using WSUS. It's just a checkbox. If you enable that in WSUS and you're just using WSUS for patching, that's really easy. The big impact there is that it will double the size of your disk space consumed by the update stored on your WSUS server, because it will download express versions and non-express versions. So be aware of that. But otherwise, it's generally a positive change for all of your installations. Config Manager will ignore those express updates, so don't bother trying to enable it if you're using Config Manager for patching. Even though it pulls updates from WSUS, it currently doesn't know what to do with those express updates, so there's no real point of doing that. There is something being worked on for that, really to try to address that Config Manager scenario, but that's still a ways off. If you look at peer-to-peer overall, peer-to-peer is all about really taking the traffic out of the data center and pushing it out to the edges of the network. It's not too hard to get 90% of the traffic shifted away from your data center. So if you think your distribution points are fairly well loaded today, or maybe you don't think they have the capacity to do this, certainly if you implement something like branch cache, you will solve that problem, because they'll be suddenly much less busy. It's amazing, just looking at the Config Manager current branch implementation, how much the benefit you get out of these peer-to-peer distribution techniques. Even for simple things like Config Manager policy downloads, every time a client asks the server, do you have any new policies for me, any new instructions on what I should do, it will download that using bits, using peer cache, so one client can download and then share that same policy with all the other PCs on the subnet. So it will even offload things from your management points if you're using Config Manager. So very nice, easy to implement. You just need to set a couple of group policies to enable that, enable a few firewall rules, turn on branch cache on your distribution points, and in the case of WSUS, your WSUS servers, and off it goes. We have another technology called delivery optimization. Delivery optimization is more of a cloud-based service. If you're using Windows Update or Windows Update for Business, this cloud-based service is very similar to branch cache, but implemented differently. Instead of the clients just sending out broadcasts on the local subnet looking for peers, which is how branch cache works, it will talk to a service in the cloud and say, I need this particular update, where can I get it? And instead of just telling it, oh, you can get it from the Windows Update service, or if you're using WSUS, instead of just getting it from the WSUS server, it will also come back with a list of peers. There are a variety of configuration options that you can put in place for delivery optimization to determine what set of peers it will actually pick from, but it can then grab that complete content from another PC within your network rather than having to go out to the internet and grab it. Delivery optimization is turned on by default if you're using Windows Update or WSUS, so you'll see if you watch the network traffic going on that it will talk to a WSUS server, it'll then talk to the delivery optimization service, and then it might grab the content from the peer instead of grabbing it from the WSUS server. So much more detail on that in the session on Wednesday when we get into more of the size conversations. Another challenge that we have been working on and that we'll continue working on are the inbox applications. There are some apps that are included in Windows 10 Enterprise, even in Windows 10 Pro, that organizations may not want, like Xbox app. So it's not uncommon for an organization to remove that application. We publish documentation, scripts, blogs, etc., that explain how to remove those inbox apps, which isn't that hard to do, but the challenge right now is that when you install the next feature update, they come back again. So there are some workarounds to that in the short term. Longer term, we'll make sure that the product handles that and doesn't put them back. But in the short term, you can run a script after the upgrade to take them out again, which is pretty easy to do if you're running a Config Manager task sequence to drive the process. If you are using a media-based deployment, again, with a Config Manager task sequence or MDT or something like that, you can mount the install.wim and you can take them out of the install.wim and then use that modified install.wim to do your upgrade process. If the apps aren't present in the install.wim, then the feature upgrade won't put them back. Let's take a look at that for a moment. Hopefully my PC is awake again. It seems to think I'm in battery mode all the time now. Now I lost my connection. So the process is pretty simple. If I take the install.wim, mount it, which I can do in PowerShell or from a command line, and once it's mounted, I can then get a list of the provisioned applications that are included inside of the WIM. Once I could see the applications that are present, I can deprovision any of them that I don't want to keep around. We'll see if it actually connects again for me. The next steps that you would use after that really are just to unmount the WIM, committing those changes, and then use that WIM to do the actual feature update deployment using a Config Manager task sequence, an MDT task sequence, or any other media-based deployment. We'll wait on that. We'll come back to that in a minute. And let me see if I can keep my machine from going to sleep. So, yeah, the question was, is there any simple way to do this with a feature update? Not today. It's something that we're looking at. We do expect to get at least a partial solution in place for the next feature update. It might take a second feature update to get the full capability in place. If you're familiar with the way the Universal Windows platform and Universal Windows apps work, there are installed apps and there are provisioned apps. When we're working on the install.wim, we're only dealing with provisioned apps. If we waited until the operating system was up and running, then we'd have to worry about installed apps and provisioned apps. And that's a little bit trickier because we have to remove them from remove the provisioned app so that they don't install per user, and then we had to remove the per user installs for any user that had already signed on before that. So there are some extra steps that would need to be done in that particular case. We've also experienced a few issues around the settings migration that happens during an in-place upgrade. It should migrate everything. It should maintain all of your default applications. It should maintain all of your data settings, pretty much every setting included in the operating system. But we have had some bugs where that hasn't happened. If you do see any instances where that's not happening, please submit feedback through the feedback tools or through your TAM or through a support case to let us know about those. We will consider all of those bugs and do our best to squash each one of those. Most of those, at least most of them that have been reported, have been addressed in 1607, and they continue to be addressed. So that's one of the benefits of the dynamic updating process, is as we fix those issues, those dynamic updates installed or applied to that particular upgrade process will include those fixes without you having to wait for the next feature update. We've also published some details about how you could do a pre-flight ahead of time. If you wanted to run a simulation of what would the result of this upgrade be if I tried to run it next week. So I could run setup.exe and specify an additional compat scan only switch, where that compat scan only switch causes it to go through the motions of doing the upgrade, but not actually do the upgrade. So it will go through all the compatibility checks, and when it's done, report back a return code telling you whether it was successful or whether there were some issues that needed to be addressed. Those issues would include things like insufficient disk space, incompatible driver, an incompatible application, anything that would get in the way of making this a successful upgrade would be reported back as a return code. So you could run this on all your PCs and have the results reported back to a central point through Config Manager or whatever, and then be able to look at the reports and see, well, what are the types of issues that I could run into? We'll talk about another option in a bit for doing the same thing with Windows Upgrade Analytics. Same basic process, but driven by telemetry and the cloud rather than running a compatibility check. But it is available for you to run through the actual failures, the actual details of any incompatible apps or drivers are stored in XML files that are written into the output folder. So if you look in the $Windows-BT-sources-panther folder, you'll see a bunch of XML files that have the detailed results of the compatibility scan. We've also made some enhancements to the updating process. We've got a new active hours policy where you can control when updates should be installed. So rather than just reboot after 1 hour or 4 hours or something like that, we can specify that this PC is active from 8 a.m. to 8 p.m., so please don't install or initiate any reboots during that time period. That can be set interactively. That can also be set by policy, so you can use a group policy to set that. If you do that through the UI, I believe it limits you to specifying, I think it's a 12-hour window of active time, but if you set it via group policy, you can stretch that to even longer periods of time if you want. So let me see if I'm back on a PC here. It's a positive sign. Let's switch back over here and look at apps for a minute. So I've already taken the install.wim and mounted it, which is a simple one-liner in PowerShell. And then at that point, I can query the available AppX provision packages that are available in that image. and then look at the resulting list and figure out, well, which ones might I want to remove? There are some that you won't be able to remove or that you shouldn't be able to remove. Things like the Connect app, the camera app. There are a few of system applications that can't be removed, but most of the other ones can be removed, including the one here, this Xbox app. So we could then specify let me see if I can filter these where the network is really suffering. Everybody put your laptops away. Okay, I tried. We'll come back to that again. So active hours, you can control when the PC reboots. There's new Windows Update for business policies. These new Windows Update for business policies allow you to specify delays for when the feature update should be installed, those 3.5 gig every 6 months or so, additional features to get added to Windows, as well as the monthly quality updates. You can specify to delay the installation of those for anywhere from 1 to 180 days, depending on the type of item. That's a change from Windows 10, 15, 11. In Windows 10, 15, 11, you could specify whether this machine should defer updates or not. And if you specified to defer updates, you could then specify to defer quality updates by 1 to 4 weeks, and you could defer feature updates by 1 to 8 months. But that meant that you could only do deferrals once the machine, or only for PCs that were declared as current branch for business. If you've seen the discussions around Windows Update for, or sorry, about Windows as a service, I've got a session on that tomorrow. We talk about using ring deployments and doing multiple pilot rings followed by multiple broad deployment rings, but you couldn't actually implement that using the Windows Update for business policies because it didn't allow deferrals within the current branch. The new settings in Windows 10 1607 allow that because they break it apart and let you set the branch and the deferral separately. So I can specify then in days how many days I want to defer based on the CB or CBB timeframes. So a lot more flexibility there. The only gotcha, if you're going through and updating your central group policy store with the new ADMX files for Windows 10 1607, the new policies are in the new ADMX files. The old policy is not in the ADMX file. So if you've got a mixture of 1511 and 1607 PCs, which you all probably would, you won't be able to set them all from the same workstation. You would have to use a separate workstation to configure the old policies. We've gotten after them for doing that. That's not a good practice as far as group policy settings go. Hopefully we'll get that one addressed in the future. But in the meantime, the new policies will show up. The old policy disappears. The new policies are only in effect for Windows 10 1607. The old policy only works on 1511. We already talked about delivery optimization. That is used with WSUS, both with Windows 10, 15, 11, and 1607. It does try to do peer-to-peer distribution for all updates that it's pulling from WSUS. There are some policies to control that or turn that off. In the case of Windows 10, 15, 11, there's a policy you can set to set it to bypass delivery optimization. In 1607, there's an additional option to basically tell it to use bits instead, and when it uses bits, then it would be able to leverage branch cache. So some options there. So we've talked about this a few times. We'll stress it again. We do have two types of updates. We have quality updates, which are the monthly patches that go out. We actually will release them more than once a month, but for most of you, you probably are only looking at them on Patch Tuesday. We want to encourage you to look at them more often. What you'll see on Patch Tuesday are new security updates, but you'll see on other Tuesdays and other times through the month additional non-security fixes. Since these updates are all cumulative, every new update that we release always contains all the older fixes. So you only ever need to install one update to get a particular Windows 10 PC up to date, with a few asterisks next to that, because there are some exceptions to that. You'll occasionally see a servicing stack update. It needs to be installed by itself because it's updating the servicing that processes the rest of the patches. You may see a separate Adobe Flash patch because they're released on separate schedules, and there can always be the occasional out-of-band patch that's released to address a zero-day vulnerability. All of those end up getting rolled up into future cumulative updates. We also have the feature updates. Those feature updates, targeting 2 to 3 times per year, roughly. We did announce in a blog when the 1607 anniversary update was released that we would only have one feature update in 2016, so you've already seen it. We'll have two of them in 2017, and then we'll work after that to see what's the best rhythm for going forward beyond that. We do encourage all customers to sign up for the Insider Preview so that you can follow along in our development process and be able to provide feedback to us on the new capabilities that we're adding. We're also planning in a couple of weeks to change the servicing for down-level OSs, so for Windows 7 and Windows 8.1. We've been releasing separate security updates and quality updates each month, so there was anywhere from 1 to 20 different patches released every month. As we move forward, we want to simplify that, so we expect to release one security-only update that just contains the new security updates each month, as well as a second update roll-up that contains new security and non-security updates. So you get a choice. If you're the type of organization that only deploys security updates, you can keep going. You just deploy the security-only updates and you're fine. If you're the type that deploys every update that we release, then you can use those update roll-ups. As long as you install the latest one, you get all the new updates that have been out since we start this process in October. So over time, it becomes a much easier deployment process. We're hoping that we'll have additional information to publish about that either late this week or early next week, trying to get that next level of detail out there to explain to you what you might need to do in your environment to adjust for those new two updates coming out each month. I mentioned Upgrade Analytics before. Upgrade Analytics is a service that we're providing for free that allows us to see information about the PCs and the apps and drivers and firmware and other things on them so that you can take action before trying to upgrade them. There are several steps necessary to set this up. You need to set up a free OMS subscription. The Azure-based OMS service is used to show you this data and allow you to dive through it. You need to tag your PCs to indicate that they belong to your organization, and you need to enable telemetry on those PCs to at least the required level that Upgrade Analytics wants. But once we have that information, we can show you the issues that may exist in your environment. So let me see if I can get my problematic connection out of the way. And bring up Upgrade Analytics. So the idea behind Upgrade Analytics is really just to let you drill into the details of your environment. If you're familiar with the AppCompat toolkit, that was the tool that we provided in the past where you could run an inventory, feed it into a database, sync it with Microsoft, get additional details down, and then run reports against it. We've deprecated the AppCompat toolkit. It's actually not present in the ADK anymore, so if you downloaded that, you'll see that only the shim generating tools are there now. This is really the replacement, enabling us to show you more real-time and simplified views of that data. so I can look at a particular set of PCs, be able to see details on those, identifying PCs that would be ready for pilot, maybe additional issues with applications. Maybe there are some business critical applications that I should look at. I may have applications with known issues. I need to drill into those. Applications with fixes available. I need to drill into those. Maybe I need to deploy updates for those applications in order to address those issues. So we're trying to provide actionable information as much as we can to show you the issues within your environment that we know about. Now we're working on combining that information with another source of data as well. If you haven't seen the Ready for Windows site, this is another source that will shortly be merging into the Upgrade Analytics service. But Ready for Windows is about showing you support statements. Which of the applications in your environment have ready, published support statements out there for the applications that you're running? So we can search for a particular application, maybe Citrix, and find all the applications that they have, and then drill in on them, like Citrix Receiver. We can then see the support statement. Yes, this is supported on Windows 10. We have a link to learn more that would take us to the Citrix website where they have details. And then we can see a lot of data on all the different versions of Citrix Receiver that we can see via telemetry. And next to each one of those, we can indicate whether they're highly adopted, indicating that this is running on tens of thousands of PCs, so it's probably working just fine. It's probably an app that you shouldn't worry about. And some other versions, we may say, oh, there's insufficient data for this because we're seeing this on such a small number of PCs. We can't prove, based on the usage information, that this app actually is working fine. But this at least allows you to continue to filter down the apps that you want to test. The ones that you want to focus on are not the ones that are highly adopted. You really want to focus on the applications where there is insufficient data. Of course, if there's an updated version that is highly adopted and you're using a version that has insufficient data, hopefully you're either running a later version that has a specific fix that you wanted, or you have a nice way of moving forward. I should probably close my email so it stops popping up here. Go away, I'm on stage. So this Ready for Windows data will be merged into Upgrade Analytics in the future so that we can see all of that information at one place. So don't expect the Upgrade Analytics capabilities to stop. It is a cloud-based service. We'll continue to enhance it and add additional capabilities as we go along. If you didn't catch the URL for the other one, it is readyforwindows.com. This one's actually run by our developer evangelism group. They are reaching out to the ISVs and teaching them about Windows as a service so that they understand what they need to do to support these more frequent feature updates that are coming out, that they also need to be working with the insider preview build so that they're ready to go once the current branch release comes out. When we talk about deploying updates then, we have choices, and I've mentioned these as we go through. The choice of which tool you use probably is dependent on what you're using already today. I mean, over time, we'd really like to see more customers moving to Windows Update for Business, leveraging the cloud service, getting rid of any infrastructure that might be required on-prem, and just greatly simplifying the updating process. But there are probably reasons in the near term where you'll want to continue using WSUS if that's what you're using today. You'll want to continue using System Center Configuration Manager if that's what you're using today. We just want to make sure that when you're using those that you do the right things to support these types of updates. In the case of WSUS, there are some hot fixes that need to be installed on it to support the new type of update, the feature update that's needed to upgrade to the latest releases of Windows 10. We want you to set up peer-to-peer with branch cache. We want you to set up the necessary infrastructure to push out these updates. We will go into more detail on each one of these in the Windows as a Service session, which I believe is tomorrow, to dive into each one of these to make sure that you understand, how do I set up rings? How do I set up these deployment groups? How do I do a staged deployment through my organization so that I don't need to do as much upfront testing? Instead, I'm going to leverage these pilots to validate apps as I go along. Overall, we look at the compatibility data from Windows 10 and see customers telling us 99% of the apps just work. Well, if 99% of the apps just work, you probably don't want to spend an hour per application trying to test them all just to prove that you're right. Yes, 99% of our apps do indeed just work. You may want to test the critical ones inside of your organization, but hopefully that critical list is only 10 to 20% of the applications, not all 3 or 4 or 5,000 of the applications that you have available. So let's talk then about provisioning. Provisioning is really designed for new PCs. We want to be able to take a new PC out of the box and transform it into a device that's ready for business use. We want really to enable this without any IT intervention at all. We don't want IT people to have to touch this PC because that's time and money being spent to get this PC set up. Instead, we want to enable scenarios where you could send a PC in a box directly to the user with a one-page set of instructions that would basically say, get the PC out of the box, plug it in, turn it on, type in your user ID and password, and then sit back and let it set itself up. That's what we want to enable. Janani showed a demo of that this morning in Rob Leffert's session. We want to enable those scenarios with Azure Active Directory and mobile device management solutions, so that when you join a PC into Azure Active Directory, all you're really doing is typing in your email address and your password. That enrolls the device and gets it managed via Intune or another MDM service at the same time. And the MDM service then pushes the configuration needed down to the device. That can include changing the SKU of Windows from Pro to Enterprise, installing additional software, applying policies, any settings that need to be applied to the PC. That's the simple, automated, from the cloud solution. We also have solutions that are IT driven, where you may not yet be ready to make the move to Azure Active Directory and Intune. Maybe you want to continue using Active Directory and Group Policy and System Center and just supplement it with additional capabilities that we offer. So we have a tool for creating a standalone provisioning package, this Windows Imaging and Configuration Designer, Windows ICD. This enables us to configure the same types of things, but doing it in a manner that creates a file that contains all of that, that you can then apply to a PC yourself. I wouldn't consider this a user-friendly option, because what user is going to want to take a USB stick that contains a provisioning package, insert it into a PC when it's at the initial UBI screen, hit the Windows key 5 times, browse to the provisioning package, and apply it? That's probably a bit more than what you want most of your users to go through, but for an IT person, that's trivial. That enables you, especially in small and mid-sized organizations, to easily set up PCs without having to re-image them. That's the long-term goal. We want to get to the point where we don't need a golden image applied to each new PC, because doing that requires a lot of work on drivers and firmware and configuring the image so that it works properly on each new type of PC that you have. So we have been working on the ICD tool, and we've added new capabilities with each of the ADK releases that we've made since the initial Windows 10 RTM. In the 15.11 release, we added the ability to specify command lines so that if you wanted to add in arbitrary content, you could do that and specify how to process that content, which is great for installing things like management agents. You could put the management agent into a provisioning package so that applying that provisioning package just sets up the management agent, and then the agent can take over and push everything else down. With 16.07, we shifted a little bit to focus on simple scenarios. We wanted to enable scenarios where we could walk an IT generalist through this process. How would an IT generalist go about creating a provisioning package that joins a PC into Active Directory, enables it for management, sets up a Wi-Fi connection, really just very basic stuff to get it to the point where it can then be managed using whatever management tool you have in place. So that's been the focus with the new ICD. Let me see if I can get it to launch here. So this is the new ICD. If we look down the left-hand side, these are the simple wizards that we've created, one for simple provisioning and one for school devices. In the case of simple provisioning, we just specify a provisioning package name. Maybe let's just call it SMB. And then we fill in the blanks. Now the assumption here is that you're doing this during UBI, so the machine boots up initially and asks you for your time zone and basic information like that. At that point, we can still configure the machine name, so we can put in a pattern that we want to use for generating computer names. We could put in a product key if we wanted to upgrade Windows. We can specify a Wi-Fi connection type if we wanted to. We could specify details for enrolling into Active Directory, so doing an AD join, specifying the domain, username, and optionally a local administrator account. And at that point, we're done. We just say, now create me a provisioning package that does that. That's the basics. Nice and simple. Anyone can walk through that and generate a provisioning package to do those steps. Same thing for schools, but in the school case, we have an additional option in the list to set up school settings. In the case of school settings, we can set up a PC for shared use. How many of you have seen when you log into Windows the first time, Windows 10, initially after installation or any time you install a feature update, you see a blue screen that displays text and starts pulsing, and basically it takes a few minutes for it to set up the PC the first time after each feature update's installed. With shared use and shared PC mode, it effectively eliminates that, because instead of installing the applications at first login, it defers that, so the user can get to the desktop faster and can then go about doing their business. This is really for school scenarios, because imagine a school that has a cart full of PCs and the student walks into the classroom and grabs a PC at random. It's not going to be a PC that they've ever used before. At least odds are, at least for the first several weeks of class, they're not going to get the same PC. So it's going to be a first login for them each day for weeks. That takes too long. They can't spend the first 5 to 10 minutes of class waiting to log into the PC. They need to be able to get to the desktop immediately. So that's really what this was designed for, was to enable those shared cart capabilities. That's not to say that this doesn't also have some enterprise use cases. We're still analyzing some of those, but this enables us to really speed up the initial logon process and subsequent logons to that device by separating out some of that processing and making it asynchronous. There is a session later this week, I don't remember what day, that Mark Shepard and, I'm drawing a blank now, another PM, whose name I will remember, Donahue, I can't remember his first name, Mr. Donahue, will demonstrate how to do this by setting up the provisioning package, applying it to a PC, and then showing you the difference. So they've run lots of benchmarks for Active Directory and Azure Active Directory and local accounts to see what's the difference before and after when we have shared PC mode enabled versus when it's not enabled. So you'll definitely want to check that out. That's opens up some interesting scenarios that you might want to consider. One of the challenges with provisioning, when you want to take a PC out of the box and transform it into a business device, is the extra stuff that's on that PC. How do we get rid of that extra stuff? So we're still working on mechanisms for doing that. Right now, the easiest way to get rid of it is just not to have it there in the first place. Most of the OEMs will ship you a PC that's a clean PC without those pieces. All the Surface devices ship like that all the time, but for other OEMs, usually you can pay a few extra dollars to get them to not include those extra applications, the extra trialware, bloatware, whatever you want to call it, on the PC. Without that stuff present, then it's much easier to provision the additional stuff that you want to add. We are looking at ways of solving that ourselves to enable you to remove that. Maybe you could set up a provisioning package that the first time it applies to a PC, it does a PC reset that gets rid of all the third-party software to give you a clean slate, and then from that point you can add back what you want. The challenge with that is if we get rid of all the software, there might be some pieces that you actually wanted, because on an OEM device you'll have the trialware, but then you'll also have the little applets that are used to control the hardware. So being able to separate those two gets really tricky. We can get rid of all of it, we can get rid of none of it, but getting rid of a partial set of it is rather challenging. So we're still working through those issues, but in the meantime, ask your OEMs to provide you with PCs that don't have the extra stuff. We also have done some things to make changing the SKU easier. Because you're not going to be able to buy a PC from an OEM with Windows 10 Enterprise on it. They're just not allowed to sell that. You had to have a software assurance subscription or a Windows 10 Enterprise E3. So how do you take a pro machine and convert it to an enterprise PC? In the case of Windows 7, that was a wipe and load. With Windows 8.1, we enabled that via an in-place upgrade. With the original Windows 10 release, we could do that via a provisioning package or MDM policy. But with Windows 10 1607, it's literally just changing the product key. So if you go to a command line and run slmgr.bbs/ipk and then put in the Windows 10 Enterprise product key, a generic setup key that causes the PC to then go out and find a KMS server to activate, it will instantaneously change Windows 10 Pro to Windows 10 Enterprise. You don't even have to reboot. So it's literally a 2-second operation to go from Pro to Enterprise. So very easy to do that process. Of course, you can still do it with a provisioning package. You can still do it via MDM. We've also enabled this for small and medium businesses through a new Windows 10 Enterprise E3 for CSP subscription for cloud service providers. Smaller businesses work with these cloud service providers who provide them with capabilities. So if they're using that with Azure Active Directory, they can assign these Windows 10 Enterprise E3 CSP licenses to an Azure AD account so that when they log into the PC with their Azure AD account, it becomes Windows 10 Enterprise. So they didn't need to do anything. And at some point, if they decide, no, I don't want the Windows 10 Enterprise E3 subscription anymore, so they cancel it, they stop paying for it, or they remove it from that account, the next time the user logs back in, it reverts back to Pro. So it's an instantaneous and very easy process. There's no deployment that ever needs to be done for the enterprise SKU. It's just enabled and disabled as required. That capability for those cloud scenarios with SMBs is what also enables this for enterprises to use just by changing the product key. So slmgr.bbs just injects the new key and it becomes the new SKU. We're also working on some additional challenges, like being able to do an Azure Active Directory join via a provisioning package. Today, the only way to join a PC into Azure Active Directory is manually. During UBI, you can type in your ID and password. After UBI, you could go into the settings application on the system about screen, and you can specify there that I want to join Azure Active Directory and type in your account at that point. We don't have a way of doing that via provisioning package or any other automated mechanism. So we're working on creating one of those. We do expect that to be in place for the next Windows 10 feature update. And we want to make those provisioning packages easier to use inside of existing deployment processes. So imagine you're using MDT or Config Manager and you want to do an automated AAD join. You can create a provisioning package and then insert that as a step in an existing task sequence where you specify a PowerShell command to install that provisioning package. So we're on track to get all of that in place for the next feature update after 16.07 to enable those types of new scenarios. When we look at traditional deployment, we're now back to things like the ADK, MDT, Config Manager, things like that. When it comes to the assessment and deployment kit, we did release a new version with Windows 10 16.07. You can continue to use the 15.11 version of the ADK to deploy 16.07 if you want, but we'd prefer you upgrade to the new version because it does fix all known issues, including one that broke Windows PE for Config Manager, which was a bit of a pain to update Config Manager to add a file into it. But the new 16.07 ADK Windows PE fixes that. It also adds Office 2016 support to USMT. With Windows 10 16.07 Enterprise, we added the AppV and UEV agents in box to Windows 10 Enterprise, so you don't need to install those separately anymore. That also means that if you have software assurance, you can now use AppV and UEV. They're no longer considered part of MDOP from a licensing perspective. So as long as you have a software assurance subscription, you can use them. And that then means that you need the tools to configure them. So we've added the AppV sequencer and the UEV template authoring tools into the ADK because we needed a way to get them to you. Where else? Well, let's just stick them in the ADK with all the other deployment-related tools. We've significantly updated the ICD tool. We already looked at that. And we already talked about removing the AppCompat pieces. Microsoft Deployment Toolkit, the current release is MDT 2013 Update 2. That fully supports Windows 10 16.07 and the new ADK for 16.07, so you can continue using that. That one's been out for a while now. If you're still interested in what's new in that one, we've got some blog posts that go through those details. We do expect there to be an additional release later this year. Again, mostly bug fixes to fix issues that have been reported since MDT 2013 came out. There is a session going on later this week that Rob York is presenting, where he talks more about what's coming for Config Manager and MDT. He'll talk about that additional release that's coming in that session. Config Manager right now has taken some of the functionality of MDT and tried to integrate it into the product. They intend to continue to do that. The long-term goal would be to take all of the ZTI and UDI functionality and merge it into the product so that you don't need to install MDT on top of Config Manager to get those types of features. That is kind of a more longer-term view on when that will actually happen, but that is something that they are working on. When we look at Configuration Manager, most enterprises today are using Configuration Manager to manage their Windows PCs. They have a huge amount of market share, so this generally is what most customers are having to deal with. Because not only did Windows move to an as-a-service model, Configuration Manager did too. Configuration Manager has done a few updates, a few releases on their current branch model. They intend to release three of these per year, adding new capabilities and adding support for new operating systems. So generally, to get full support for a new Windows 10 release, you need to install the latest feature, the latest current branch release from Config Manager. If you just want basic support, they'll always support the N-1 version of Config Manager to support Windows 10 as well. So for Windows 10 16.07, that means Config Manager 16.06 provides full support and Config Manager 16.02 provides basic compatibility. If you're running anything older than Config Manager 16.02, that doesn't support Windows 10 16.07, so you need to upgrade. You need to get into the rhythm of updating Config Manager probably three times per year to stay at a place where you can support the capabilities that are being added to Windows 10. Now, they're not releasing these new updates just to support Windows 10. They're also adding new hybrid capabilities with Intune. They're adding additional features themselves, like some of the peer-to-peer capabilities that I mentioned before. So they are doing other things, but they're trying to make this as simple as possible so that you can upgrade Config Manager literally just by going into the Config Manager console, right-clicking and saying install. Doing that 3 times per year to upgrade all of your site servers and to upgrade all of your Config Manager clients with the new capabilities that they're coming out with. They do have 2 models, which I mentioned as we've gone through, for deploying feature updates for Windows 10. A task sequence model, where you can use Windows 10 media and then have pre- and post-processing steps. Or you can do the Windows 10 servicing plans, which leverages the ESD files from WSUS to push out the upgrades, the feature updates, more like a patch. It feels like a patch process rather than a task sequence process. If you're familiar with the headaches around the OSD preserved drive letter task sequence variable in Config Manager, the 1606 tech preview of Config Manager actually deprecated that variable because they finally fixed it. So if you are looking at Config Manager's technical preview branch, you'll see that that behavior has changed, but that also means then that the next Config Manager release that comes out this fall will eliminate the need for configuring that. So if you've ever accidentally deployed Windows and found that it was running on the D drive or the X drive or weird things like that, you won't have to worry about that anymore. That'll take care of it. We've also changed SysPrep. SysPrep in the past wouldn't allow you to prepare an OS that's been upgraded. So imagine what an organization, typically smaller organizations, would do. They would install Windows 10 1507, they would customize it the way they want, they'd SysPrep it, they'd capture it as an image. Then Windows 10 1511 comes out. They upgrade the machine. They then try to SysPrep it again, and SysPrep fails, saying, I can't SysPrep an upgraded OS. Well, now with 1607, you can. So you could take a Windows 10 1511 PC, upgrade it to Windows 10 1607, SysPrep it, and capture a new WIM. I won't say that that's a good idea, but it's certainly an option. If you're using MDT or Config Manager and you already have an automated build process in place, it's still going to be better to drop in the updated Windows 10 media and create a new image from scratch using that. But if you don't have the ability or if you don't have that type of automated solution in place, this is an option that you could use for that. It's really to enable the less sophisticated customer who thinks that building a new image is a nightmare process to go through because it takes them days to do. For most of you, hopefully you have an automated process that's literally drop in the bits, press a few buttons, and go get a coffee. That's the goal. We've also added a new capability around configuring the taskbar. So we can specify the layout that we want for the taskbar. So with Windows 10, 15, 11, you could configure the start menu, the start screen. With 1607, we've now added the taskbar into that as well. So with the taskbar, we can specify additional items that we want to pin to the taskbar or even a completely new taskbar layout that we want to put in place. There are multiple ways of doing that. Via group policy can be done. It can also be done leveraging an XML file, layoutmodification.xml, which we can drop into the Windows default app data local Microsoft Windows shell folder. And at that point, next log on, the user will see that that XML file is in place. It gets processed, and the additional items are added into the list. So it works out pretty well. The TechNet documentation walks you through all the options that are available. You do have to configure this XML file manually. You can't export a taskbar layout. You just have to lay it out in the XML directly. But the TechNet documentation includes quite a few examples that explain how to do that. And with that, the screen at front is telling me that I am about 50 seconds over time, so we should probably wrap it up. If you have any questions around this, I'll stick around up front afterwards, and I'll be around all week. Hopefully, I'll see you in some of my other sessions talking about Windows as a service, the size challenges, and we've also got a couple of Q&A sessions later in the week, one that's specifically around deployment and provisioning and servicing, and then another one that Mark's going to be helping us with, just general all-up questions around Windows 10 overall. So hopefully I'll see you around later in the week. Thanks a lot.